With the party line. Jack Keane of controls. Old man Keane. What's wrong, Jack? Don't you know how to handle it? Don't, will you please? Jack Keane is back with us tonight. Our good friend Al Nielsen is going to take a few weeks off for well-deserved vacation. And, of course, we have Russell Tinklepore and Jack Keane with us tonight. And I might add that we have celebrities here. I'm very happy to say that although it has not been my good fortune to have an autograph from this gentleman, I hope by the time we're through this morning that maybe he'll be kind enough to give me an autograph. But Ben Iskowitz, the cybernetician, is out at the space convention this past Saturday, September 13th. I was at Menger's Farm, Howard Menger's Farm in Lebanon, New Jersey. And I don't know why Bennett was so amazed, but a lot of people rushed right over when they knew that that was good old Ben, and they wanted his autograph.
I thought they were going
to
rush over
the link. No, and they wanted to take pictures and what have you. See, this is Long John with the party line. From midnight to 5:30, 6 mornings during the week. Monday mornings, we get started about 1, continue through to 5:30, and that means we're around for 37 and a half hours a week. During that time, we have the pleasure of talking with many interesting people. And this morning, we have Ben Iskowitz with us, and Ellery Lanier, and Lillian Lanier. And we're going to be playing some tapes. We made a lot of tapes out at the convention. We had Bob Mantler and Dave Steele helping us. And, of course,
he's a terrific dog.
Boy, I want to tell you, Bob Mantler, I think Bob was sitting in front of that tape recording equipment for, possibly 10 hours or so.
With an Indian blanket wrapped around.
It got very cold at night.
It was very cold.
In the afternoon, it was beautiful out there. Wonderful, hot summer's day, plenty of sun and all. And, what seems to be wrong,
fellas? You ever go around shopping things, I know.
No one.
Not at all. I'm
sorry. We are?
May have hope of
this. This is an enigma.
I think we got to tell. We got to tell. So we've got to tell our listeners what happened. We have five microphones, and naturally, each one of these five is connected to an individual's heart. There is a rheostat, or a plate, or whatever they call it, in the control booth. So, our good friend Jack Keane, he's working hard in there. And Ben is talking on a microphone, and Mr. Keane has the pot wide open, and nothing happens. And he calls Rux up, and the two of them sit there, and they get their Radio Television Training Association book out. Charles Leaving's Dog Obedience Training book out, and they're trying to figure, what are we going to do? And all of a sudden, one of the brilliant engineers decided there must be something wrong. Well, what actually happened? One of the mics, he's on a little different stand. It's about an inch and a half or 2 inches higher than the one that Ben prefers. And Ben didn't say anything to the engineer. He just switched the microphone. He's got one that he wants to talk into, and we didn't know what was happening. But we're in business now. Let's get back to the convention for a moment. Eden Gray was out at the convention, and of course we had sort of skipped over Bob Mantler and Dave Fields. Actually, when we got out to the Menger Farm, and it didn't take too long, I'd say about an hour and 15 minutes. When we got out there, we found that they were in action already. There, a lot of people had arrived prior to the time that we arrived there. And they have a beautiful home out there, and we had a porch, which was a screened-in porch, where they permitted us to set up our equipment, and we found Jules D. St. Germain out there with his equipment, and of course the mystical tonsorial artist of Brooklyn, he was running around with his white jacket on. He had the jacket on, incidentally. There are many people walking around too. And the mystical barber was there.
Also in a white jacket.
Yes, that's right. That's Lillian Lanier. Then
has a little white stripe that crisscrossed in front of him.
Well, I've got to admit that he attracted a tremendous crowd.
Oh, he did.
So there was a lot of people out there. A lot of people wanted to meet the mystic barber. And we worked in this screened-in porch that the Mengers were very kind to permit us to use. We set up our equipment on a card table, and Bob Mantler and Dave Field got all of the equipment ready for us. And, I'd say about 30 minutes after our arrival at the spacecraft convention, we were in business, and we started to record the interviews. We had the opportunity of interviewing maybe 75 or 100 people. And, of course, Taylor Kazan was with us. And, what's that?
The Dole.
Oh, the Dole. Yeah, well, I was going to talk about the Lester and Yelp, because Lester was around with me. We worked with two pieces of equipment. I had a miniature tape recorder with me, the Mohawk Midget Tape, which certainly turned out to be very, very handy. And I must say, thanks to the manufacturer of that unit, because they were able to give me some extra cables and things to use, which were of great value at this convention. And I was able to walk around carrying this little unit, and Lillian Lanier and Ellery Lanier and Taylor and Sergeant Morris Paley and all of these people were kind enough to get people in groups, and we had a great time. We got a lot of things on tape, and I think it'll be of interest to many of our listeners. Now, I don't know how many of these listeners read any of the articles that appeared in the newspaper. One particular thing that interested me, I didn't know this, but I'm just reading a portion of a special article that was sent to the New York Post. From Lebanon, New Jersey, and the dateline is September 15th. It seems that Andrew Sinatra of 702 Belmont Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, who terms himself as the Mystic Barber, circulated among the crowd handing out his business card. The Mystic Barber wore a barber's coat. Around his head, he wore a metal band rigged up with buttons and wires. He said the band kept him in telegraphic touch with the saucer name. His card read, lectures and consultations. Period. Extra sensory perception. Period. Astral projections in space. Period. And solar therapy.
Krupa.
John, not lunar therapy?
No, this is solar. S-O-L-A-R. Unless this is a... No, this is solar. S-O-L-A-R. Thank you. Also, we had the pleasure of meeting a clinical psychologist, Dr. Arnold Tenenberg. And I was told that Mr. Tenenberg was interested in mingling with the people out there. And I was told that he intended to do a survey. And he was using the interviews similar to Kinsey's for her. And I understand that the doctor is going to weed out. Now, this is his statement. I'm paraphrasing it. Weed out liars, psychopaths, and persons suffering from delusions. And according to the doctor, he had no intention of interviewing any of those people. Pardon me. Now, according to reports, I did not see this myself. You may say, well, if you spent some 15 or 20 hours at a spacecraft convention, you would seem that you could get around a little bit. Of course, it's a 100-acre farm. And I don't mean to imply that the spacecraft convention was scattered over the entire 100 acres. But for some reason, I seem to be on one side of the house at all times because I was on a side, and I might say the back of the house, facing a red barn, and we were told that in those free energy motors. I did not have the opportunity of going in the barn, and I must also be fair to the vendors. I did not request the opportunity of seeing the spacecraft. I'd rather the free energy motors. But in the back of the house, they had a crowd of, it was estimated at about 700 or 800 people. Somebody told me they had 1,200 people. Another count turned out to be 400. Let's say they had a lot of people there. But I was working at the front of the house to get away from the lectures. After all, they had public address systems, and I didn't want to wait 4 or 5 hours before I would start to interview. So I had my equipment, that is the microphone, around the front of the house and the side of the house, and I didn't get a chance to move around. Now, I was told, and it's also reported in this article from the New York Post, that they were selling the hula hoop. That I think you'll find that if you have a youngster, the youngsters must have a hula hoop. Everybody has them. But I was told that at the space convention, they weren't sold as hula hoops. They were sold as space rings. Now, I did not see this myself. More than that, I can't say. However, a very interesting part of the spacecraft convention, I think, was a lecture given by Otis T. Carr of Baltimore. Now, Mr. Carr, Mr. Colton of the OTC Enterprises, arrived in Lebanon, New Jersey at the spacecraft convention, I would say about 6:30 or 7 at night. And they didn't have too much time to spare for the spacecraft convention. Mr. Colton told me that they intended to come back the following day, which would be Sunday. We were there on Saturday. I am told, again, this is something that was reported to me because I didn't have time to hear the lectures. But I was told that an announcement was made during Mr. Carr's lecture that he is leaving December 7th, 1959. Where? Leaving the Earth. He's going to the moon on December 7th, 1959. And according to Mr. Carr, he would act as the pilot navigator and would take along one passenger Major Wayne Ahole of the Air Force Reserve. Now, according to Mr. Ahole, Major Ahole, during his lecture, he made the statement that the country was in danger because the Pentagon is hiding the truth about saucers from the public. And, of course, Jean St. Germain, the attorney from Lynbrook, Long Island, he was invited to say a few words to the group that had gathered on the grounds in the rear of the house. And Jules B. St. Germain took the microphone just long enough to denounce the host, Howard Bender. And he made the statement that he did not believe one word of what Bender had said. However, I might also add that there was no tremendous round of applause for Jules B. St. Germain. It was dead silence. As he left the microphone, and of course Jules is a member of the Civilian Saucer Intelligence Group, and he is not a believer. I might, first of all, let me just take a moment to tell our listeners, we arrived there. I saw about 2 o'clock in the afternoon at 2:15. And we went to the... We parked our car, and we got out of the car, and we took our equipment up to the Mender's house. Our little car to set up our equipment. And we met a gentleman from Slate Records, a man who manages Howard. He has a manager who... present time, and we met Mrs. Mender, and I told her Mrs. Mender's mother, who is certainly a very, very sweet and a very charming lady, a wonderful hostess. She made certain that around 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night, that we're up and things like that. And believe me, they were very, very welcome that hour, and we certainly appreciate it. I'm sorry to say, I don't remember her name. However, it happened to be Mrs. Mender's mother. And she prepared sandwiches and coffee. And must have made about 10 pots of coffee there. And certainly was wonderful because it got rather cold around 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night. And then, of course, they had these lectures, Otis C. Carr and... Holton of OTC Enterprises and Howard Menger and the various people who have been on the party line were kind enough not to give a lecture, but just to say a few words, such as Lillian Lanier and Ellery Lanier and Benter Swift and Sergeant Paley and Eden Gray and Kayla Kazan and Dave Field and Bob Mantler. We just said a few words. And that of course, we've got a lot of tapes for you this morning, but that's about my report at the end. So you'd like to add something, Ben? Is Ben on mic, incidentally?
Well, the one thing that I want to say is that I Ellie and I spoke about this briefly for a few moments later that night, is that for... I was kind of hesitant that I wanted to go, but I was kind of hesitant just going out there. I mean, because after all, you're going to a space convention, a flying saucer convention. I thought, you know, really, we're going to be surrounded by flips of all kinds. And we got out there, and we went into this little port, and people started milling around. And, I mean, actually, the convention started on the other side of the house, and people were still milling around this port. You know, for a minute I felt like I was in a zoo and people were coming, you know, to see me in a cage or something like that. And then we started talking to these people. I started asking who was who and all the rest of it. And we started talking to them. And one thing I really want to say is that I have never met such a bunch of nice, solid, bright, wonderful people in my life. And you know, finally began to worry, guys, you know. You know, what are you doing at a space convention? You know, I said, you really believe in flying saucers? Oh, no, we don't believe in flying saucers. We came to see Long John.
And this happened over and over again. Every time I met some very wonderful people out there. There was a young boy I was speaking to for about 2.5 hours who taught himself electronics, a wonderful person, and several other people. And every time we get around to the conversation, you know, I'd finally say, you know, what are you doing in a space convention? He said, you came out too long. This happened over and over again. And I remember at one point, when the speakers were being introduced, there was starvation, and started clapping. We wanted Long John. And I think, frankly, most of the people I met out there primarily came out to see Long John. And I was really, you know, very, very astonished how wonderful our listeners really are. I always knew they were great, but I really was to see this, you know, in the flesh. These are really great people. Ellie?
Ben, I can't top your reservations, although I agree with them more. I want to just mention something very strange that happens sometimes. There are coincidences in time. The last we heard of a spacecraft convention from St. Louis Flying Saucers out on the coast, something else happened at the same time. And now with this spacecraft convention, it just happened that the day following this spacecraft convention, there's another spacecraft convention going on in Detroit, Michigan, under the auspices of the American Research Society. And it is a very serious thing. I don't know how these fellows happen to get their time so close together. And then there was another exhibit going on in New York City. Lillian and I took it in the day after the spacecraft landed out in Jersey up at the Heidi Planetarium. And they have a very wonderful exhibit of spacecraft. There's one model of a manned spacecraft, and there are very fine exhibits of these very strange-looking devices for flight in outer space and even beyond the solar system. This happens to be part of the public aviation company devices that they're developing now for the space exploration. And I was speaking to one gentleman there, Mr. Hamilton Warren. He's a very spacecraft with but to get back to the major farm, I think the strangest thing was this huge parking lot along the meadow facing the house with many automobiles, and somewhere along the line a fence had broken and a herd of cows had gotten loose amongst the parked cars, and people were chasing cows up and down the corridors between the automobiles. The first thinking is nursery rhyme of the cow jumping over the moon. And I was wondering whether the influence of the people who flew to the moon and the premises had affected these cows and gotten them to take these sort of semicircular leaps up into the air. And then, I think, very amusing. I think this whole thing was very amusing, but I think it was significant in many ways. The showing of the movie film at night of Flying Saucers and the comments of the audience about this movie, which was projected against a huge bed sheet that was tacked up to the back of the house. Yeah.
I understood it was right on the clapboard side of the house.
Right, it overlapped. Well, and this was a combination of old home movies and some very odd deep-shaped things in a very blue sky shimmering and floating around and looking something like a jellyfish.
Yeah, one girl described them as wavering chandeliers.
Yes. And then there was an old-fashioned kind of chuck wagon serving pop and hot dogs and stuff like that. It was a great big carnival, and there were children running around and dogs running around and people were eating sandwiches. And as Ben was saying, this seems strange, but all over the place there were electronic engineers and nuclear physicists, and there were several aviators who had spent hundreds or thousands or whatever the quantity of hours out in the air all around the world have searched for flying saucers and not seen anything. This was a fantastic experience.
I'm speechless for a moment. I remember talking to the aviator, but
talk to one electronics engineer.
Well, let's finish it, though.
There were
a lot of people out there. Lillian.
John, my first experience after the Menger farm was with a cow. As I stepped out of the car, this lovely, woolly face came up to me, and I felt the eating girl this must be a cow. And Eden looked this lovely thing over, and she said, if it were a cow, it would have udders. So I assumed it was not a cow. However, there were about five cows around this charming girl. Yes. He was very small. He wasn't quite so
big.
And he was sort of nudging me. He was right near the car. There were several horses. There were people on horseback. I met quite a few people who said to me that they didn't really believe that we were skeptical, that the Long John group was skeptical. They all wanted to see Long John, and they wanted to know whether Long John, deep down in his heart, didn't really believe. And they thought all of us really felt that flying saucers existed, but we didn't want to admit it. And there was one young man who said to me that he didn't believe in flying saucers at all, but he had gotten every book and every pamphlet that was ever published on the subject. And he figured that if so many things were published, something must be true about it.
Talk to Dave Bell. We had requests out there for Mel Chiloney, for William E. Preston Jr. We go on and on. And also, of course, this was not really unusual or unexpected. I frankly expected this to happen. But I think that possibly Lester Del Rey was a little amazed. The tremendous amount of people out there that knew Lester Del Rey, not from being on the party line, naturally many of them heard him on the party line, but he was a very, very popular individual out there because people had read his science fiction stories and also his book Rocket to Space and things like that.
Yeah, I walked out with Lester to get a cup of coffee from the concession stand, and we walked out of the porch and we made about 10 feet, and then someone stopped us and started talking to us, and the last I saw Lester, he was surrounded by approximately about 150 people.
I would like to say, John, that there were so many newspaper people and photographers, all of them wanting to come in and see you and take pictures of you, and you were so busy with the microphones and taking recordings, and not all of them could get through to you. We had quite a time looking for you and taking pictures. I also want to say that I met for the first time Mr. Van Hecht, who called very
George
often.
Van Hecht.
Yes, and you know... I met him, and he introduced himself, and I introduced myself, and he said, would you like to have a roasted chicken? And he gave me this very lovely little roasted chicken, which incidentally I didn't eat. Lester and his wife ate it.
Oh, now you're being unkind. That wasn't Lester's wife, that was his mother. Was that one you mean?
Yeah.
That was his mother. It came out that very charming lady. And I don't blame her for being a little confused. She's a very young-looking woman, looks about 55 or something like that.
Oh, come on.
Let's take a moment to talk about one of our sponsors. When we got out to the spacecraft convention and we got the equipment set up and we were ready to get in action, we were able to get a crowd of people around us and we started to work. Now, I think I should make this brief announcement so that people will understand. We are outdoors when we're doing these tapes. You may hear in the background dogs barking, children crying. You will. You're right, Bob. Children crying, And there's a possibility that you will also hear other people talking, not people in the crowd surrounding the microphone, but people, rather the people who are giving their talks in the rear of the hall, because they have public address systems. Public address system, some of this may be picked up on our microphone that we have located in the front of the house. First gentleman that I had the opportunity of talking with was a man by the name of Gerford. Mr. Gerford. And he wanted to tell us something about stereophonic sounds. Actually, the first question that I asked Mr. Gerford was, what bit about stereophonic sounds that you're supposed to be making?
Well, we can give it to you simply, and we can give it to you technically also. What we're doing is we set up a thing with my bassline, and I'm going to put a sort of return of it into Topeka, and we just between here in Massachusetts. And we have someone up there who is doing the same thing. We use recorders that are synchronized to the line. And we use an antenna which is designed to pick up aurora and atmosphere phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing they've been used for.
No, I'm saying, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, there are any engineers and women somewhere else going on, but the point is that we've been picking up sounds.
Can you get them out of space?
Well, we assume they are.
Well, we assume they are.
Well, we have gotten these branches and what kind of those branches? A lot of sounds, super perfect. We don't know what they're saying. We visited a linguist.
Yeah.
We have been studying up on linguistics. And he says that this is definitely a language. It's an intelligent language because the speech patterns tend to fall into the same patterns all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there tends to be a definite structure to it, a concrete structure.
Does it sound like a male or a female voice?
Well, so far it sounds like a male. We've received male at the same voice all the time. It's a perfect noise. It seems to be a male voice. Well, until you manage to think on it, if you stay with anything perfectly, you won't be able to tell direction. We're working on that now. There's a certain minimum point at which you can synchronize these things.
I'm sorry, the this is out of my line. I'm interested again. I wonder if you'd repeat. What is your name again, sir?
Gerford.
Gerford. What's your first name? William Gerford. This is Ellery Lanmore, the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. Would you be kind enough to briefly recap again to tell us what you're doing with the stereophonic sound?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're doing, sir, is trying to record as much as possible sounds that we've been picking up from somewhere that we assume in outer space. We've been picking up sounds. We've been picking up various unidentified sounds and unidentified voices on occasion. We did a great deal of this work in monaural sound with one single receiver. We use a long wire antenna and certain bandpass filters. And
Mr. Gerford, is this
Gerford?
Mr. Gerford, let me ask you this. Are you certain that these sounds are coming from outer space and not from below the surface of the Earth?
Well, we will be certain as soon as the stereo results come through finally, because you can tell, we can tell in two directions, but we can't tell up and down yet.
Well, in other words, at this moment, you really don't know whether these sounds are coming from outer space.
We don't know whether they're coming from up or down, but we know definitely that they're coming from a point several hundred miles away from our source.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you using devices similar to the radio telescope antenna that are being used by various nations in the world today?
Of a sort, yes. They are on the same principle.
And why can't you use the directional devices that are being used?
We've been unable to obtain any direction of the device
that we have
over there. We have such
perfect
limits in
there, and
critical devices.
Mr. Gerford, do you recall the man, the gentleman in New Jersey, I believe his name was Tarsi, I hope I'm not mispronouncing. Fancy, thank you.
Yes.
Listen, you recall that here in the state of New Jersey, he got some messages from outer space, which probably came from the direction of Mars back in the 1920s. Do you recall that incident? Do you know about it?
I don't remember anything of that kind. I know Jansky discovered the hydrogen band, the band of hydrogen radiation.
Well, did you know that radio station WOR had back in the 1920s, I believe it was in the 24, received some messages which apparently came from the planet Mars? It was never proven, however.
No, I was unaware of that. All that we've done is been entirely on our own without any assistance or advice from...
Well, you do say that you did get some messages.
Yes, we did get a conversation. I don't know whether it was a message directed to us or whether it was a normal conversation.
Does it sound like human speech?
That I'm unable to say.
You don't have to hear it.
Animals have these various means of communication. They talk to one another. They make sounds, and we don't. I don't know. Some people claim they do know, but you are not certain of what the speech of people from other planets would sound like.
No, we have identified this with a linguist, who we hope is the linguist, as a language. We know it is a language. It's a language being spoken with what we assume are tongue, lips, and teeth. At least it gives that impression.
It has the structure of a language.
Yes. It follows definite speech patterns.
Mr. Gilford, I'd like you to meet Mr. Del Rey.
Mind coming in a little closer, gentlemen?
Sure. Did you introduce him, Alan?
Yes, sir, but I think it's conflicting introduction. We haven't considered on
it. So what do I say?
Mr. Del Rey, a specialist in outer space and astronomy and flight by rockets around the solar system and so on.
Mr. Gilford
has worked on certain devices so that purportedly have received speech sounds from outer space.
Stereophonically.
Stereophonically.
By what means?
We have a baseline 300 miles long and a recorder at each end of it.
Yeah.
And we use long-wire antennas with advanced filtering.
Yeah.
What frequency are these sources coming in on?
I do not know.
I don't know what frequencies we're operating on.
Well,
we don't tune. We don't tune. They're just wide bandpass filters. We want to cut out 60 cycle hums.
Yeah.
We want to cut out upper frequency.
How wide are you on tune circuits?
At the moment, I don't know. I can find out, I imagine. We cut the filters by cut and try, and I don't know how wide they are.
I want to ask one
question. I wish I could be more specific
about it. You say you have done these receiving tests at night.
Yes.
And what season of the year was this?
This was some during the summer. We also did some last spring.
What part of the heavens were in your direction when you received this?
Well, we do most of them between 11 and about 2 a.m.
Have you approximated, say, for example, something coming from the Milky Way or from the planets or from the moon? Have you attempted any kind of localization in the sky?
So far, until we can be sure of precisely which direction our sounds are coming from, we haven't tried to ascertain what happened to be at that part of the sky at that time.
I believe Mr. Jansky had localized his speech. Now, the radio sounds he was speaking out of space was coming from a certain part of the Milky Way.
He did. He was getting radio sounds from any number of places, but they weren't speech and they weren't. He was getting some that were not communication. I do not know about the ones that were supposed to be intelligent communication.
Thank you very much for giving us that information. Let me talk to this young lady over here. Would you mind coming over a moment? What is your name? What is your name?
I'm Mrs. Drawer.
And why did you come out to the spacecraft convention today?
I came out to see what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. Are you a believer?
No, not so far.
Do you think you will become a believer?
I have no idea. This is all new to me. I haven't looked into anything or investigated anything. I have no idea whether I will become a believer.
So, in other words, you must have heard about this.
Yes.
You must have heard about flying saucers.
Yeah.
And how long have you been interested in them?
I can't really say right now, but I'm interested for about 5 years
or so.
Mm-hmm.
For
a couple of
years. Did you meet any Martians or Venusians here today?
Never.
Not here, no. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming over. May I talk with you a moment, sir? What is your name, sir?
Paul Picciatelli.
Paul, well, what are you doing at the first annual East Coast Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention?
Well, I'm out here from Brooklyn because I had a sighting up at Phoenicia, New York. That's up near in the Catskills. I had a sighting with my cousin, Mr. Herbert Kirchner.
And I've already made up our club in there.
Well, this is a real thing. I mean, it's just, I'm not one to make statements without rash statements, you know, without some reason.
In other words, you make unrash statements.
That's right.
Is that it?
Right.
Well, now tell us about the fire.
This was in the Catskills up in the mountains. It was a clear night on August, the week of the 15th, 1958, this August. And it was a P-shaped size, and it went across the sky very rapidly. There was no noise accompanying it. And it was going on and off periodically, about once every second, going on gradually and off gradually. And one right across the sky. There was no explanation. We both saw it. There was a witness. My cousin was a witness. He saw it first and he called me out to see it. It's a very clear night.
Mm-hmm. Ellery?
Can you describe the path this object took through the sky, whether it moved straight or did it have an erratic motion?
No, very, very straight, all the way through, right through the Milky Way, right across. No erratic motion.
Okay. I'm not trying to make a joke out of this.
Did you say this was at night?
Yes, it was 2:30 a.m.
Exactly. 2:30 a.m. And what color did the object look over? Could you see any color on it?
Yes, it was as bright as you would see Venus.
It was glowing?
Planet Venus.
Yes. How would you know that this wasn't simply
a meteor? Oh, no. It could be the Russian satellites now they're putting up and are emitting lights now. You heard that. They've put out something that's emitting on and off lights. This could be a very possible thing, but I have no explanation for it.
How high in the sky was this? Was it overhead?
Yes, it was directly overhead. And there was no apparent explanation.
What length of time did you see it for?
Approximately 35, 40 seconds.
So thank you very much for giving us this information. Here's another gentleman over here. What is your name, sir?
Arthur Sable.
Arthur, there was a very attractive young lady that just went by. You seem to be very intent on the interview that I had with this last gentleman. And all of a sudden, I lost your attention. Do you think that that lady could be a Venusian or a Martian woman?
Man, she can be something. I don't know, but...
she is. Let me ask you this question. I want a fair and square answer. If she happens to be from Venus, do you want to go to that planet?
No.
You don't want to...
Do you buy this? I mean, do you believe this?
Well, maybe the spacecraft will not be contact stories.
Not the contact stories?
No.
Why? Don't you believe them?
I have to have more proof that of contact than just the face of one person.
Let me ask you this, then. What kind of proof do you desire?
Maybe they should take me with them.
Well, no, I think that's a fair answer to my question. But let's say that somebody invited you to get into a flying saucer. Now, you went to another planet, and you came back in 15 or 20 minutes from now. And I called you over to the WOR mic, and I said to you, I wonder if you can tell us about your trip to the planet Venus. And you described it to us, and I asked another man to walk over, and he says, I don't believe this fellow. He didn't bring back any proof. How would you feel about it?
Well, I'd probably feel the same way as other people do, as people who doubt them like I do.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir, thank you very much. Thank you for talking with me. Would you mind coming over here, ma'am? May I talk with you a moment? What is your name?
This is Whitney, James Whitney.
And what are you doing at the spacecraft convention?
Well, I came out here with my husband because he listens to you all the time and he wanted to see us, so I came out with him. And I work as a night nurse in the mental institution. And I spend...
Was it necessary to tell us about your background?
I spend my nights there listening to you there, too.
I was just hoping that you didn't have some of my guests.
No,
okay.
We don't have a little time yet.
All right. Thank you very much for talking with me. Is this your son?
Yes, it is.
What's your name, son? Lanny?
Yes.
Whitney?
Yes.
What are you doing out here today?
Nothing
can make it.
You like it?
Yes.
You believe those space people?
Yes.
Wait a minute, Mr. Mayor. Do you think that there are flying saucers?
Yes.
Have you ever seen a flying saucer?
No.
Not at all. Would you like to?
No.
You wouldn't? Let me ask you this. Supposing somebody gave you the opportunity, Lanny, to go to the moon. Supposing a man came over and said to you, Lanny Whitney, you want to take a trip to the moon? Would you take advantage of that wonderful offer?
Yes.
Why do you want to go to the moon?
Just to see it.
To see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any ideas of what it would be like? You must have thought about it. Do you think there's houses on the moon?
Do
you have any idea, though?
No.
No. How old are you, Lenny?
I'm 11.
Just say it straight. You know, 11. We never say 10 at that age. We always say 11, right? Closer to 12, right? Thank you very much. Thank you for talking with me. Let me talk to this lady over here. What is your name, ma'am?
Yvette Medville.
And is this the first convention that she attended?
Yes, it's the first convention, but I was a giant rock. And,
well, that was another convention.
But not at the convention.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. And also at Panama, speaking to Adam King and Dan Castle and Chris Panther Boy.
I can hear all right. Thank you, sir. What do you think of the Adamski story?
I think he's a wonderful person, and that's how I think he's telling the truth, but he wants to sort of calm it down a little bit. And he wants to keep it completely in the physical, and he doesn't want anything of the spiritual mixed into it, like so many mixings. That's why my first thing is right.
Right or wrong?
Right.
In other words, you disagree with Adamski.
No, I agree with him, but I think that he's afraid that people are going to go overboard, and he's keeping their feet on the ground.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Adamski is
mm-hmm.
keeping the general public's feet on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were out to Giant Rock Airport.
Yes.
Not during the convention time.
No, just the month before. When mm-hmm. we were there a couple of days.
Were you in the cave?
Yes, we took pictures there.
Did you attend one of the seances?
Yes, we did.
Can you describe it to us?
It was very interesting. We sang songs. We swung in our Santa. And at the time, Mrs. Van Tassel said to the group that was there to visualize a blue light in the center, and everybody was very silent. And everything was very quiet, and then all of a sudden, Mr. Van Tassel began talking, and he gave a beautiful message.
Can you give us a brief recap of the message? What was this beautiful message that
The message
gave?
About life in general and how we're all one with the Almighty and that we all are. Well, a very beautiful thing. I could never say it. I don't think he could repeat it himself after it was all over.
Who said it then?
He did, but...
Was this a spirit entity? This is what he told you?
No, he didn't say anything. I gathered that it was himself, but his higher self. His very high self.
In other words, there's two?
Oh, definitely. We are dual.
We are.
Every one of us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Appreciate it a lot.
What is your name, sir?
My name is Maurice Dupont.
Maurice, what did you come out to the spacecraft convention for?
Simply because I'm interested and I want to learn more about it. I want to find out more things.
What did you find out today?
Today I haven't found out nothing much so far.
Are you disappointed?
No, not yet, because we just arrived here, so.
Have you ever had any unusual experience yourself?
Well, all I can say, I was in the Mojave Desert this spring, about the second or third day of May.
Mm-hmm.
And in driving at night, we saw a light appear into the heavens that looked to me about the size of a football. It was pulsating from a red to a yellowish. And back to a red.
I interrupt you for just a moment, sir. The word pulsating, when did you add that word to your vocabulary? In recent years, would you say?
In recent years, that's right.
Listening to that word being used.
I compare it with the same action that you'll find in a lightning bolt. You see there, it's pulsation.
Well, that's what I saw in the heavens.
Okay. So we swept the car and swept the motor. We began to look for a green light or a red light or a headlight. We saw nothing on it. all of a sudden, instead of taking off, it went out.
You know, we're both going to take off if you don't look at me and talk this way,
yeah.
Because the microphone is my way. I know the press is coming in, but stick with me.
So, it just appears, and we judge that object, whatever that light was, must have been about 8 miles or 9 miles away from where we were standing in the desert. So we start the car up again, and pretty soon it reappeared. So again, we stopped our motor, and no sound. Everything was near thing up in the desert. So we went on further, and it reappeared again. So this happened 7 times.
7 times?
Yeah. We were on our way to...
In what length of time?
That all happened in less than 25 minutes.
7 times?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we finally got to Giant Rock.
You were on your way there.
Yeah. So we went under Giant Rock in that
room
there, you know.
We had a meeting room and all that.
So, some people said you had decided that kept saying, look, here we are again.
They had a fixed window. So we didn't stop the meeting for that we went on.
You mean you didn't stop the meeting?
No.
You never stopped the meeting? No.
So would you mind if I continue?
Yes,
thank you. Is there something you'd like to correct?
Thank you.
Would you mind?
Now we're sitting in the cave beneath the rock,
that's
the Giant
right.
Rock Airport.
Yeah.
And George Van Tassel is in a trench.
No,
I wouldn't say a trench. Everything was quiet.
No,
who said a trench?
I said
that's
a trench.
I'm asking a question. No, he's not the trench.
What was he in?
So he was deeply involved in whatever he was saying, which I can't remember.
No,
no,
I'm not
going
to ask you to repeat it, but I'd like to ask you this, sir. If he wasn't in a trench, and if he was involved, would you say that's between a trance and his normal conscious state? Sort of in between?
You could call it that, yes. But I would neither call it a deep trance or a self-hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'd call it more of a semi-awareness.
Semi-awareness.
Because the words that he was speaking or bringing through
right.
his mouth were words that you don't hear no preacher or priest.
Let me just ask you this, sir. I want to present a couple of questions. We have a lot of people
who
are going to be kind enough to talk to us, and I would love to take hours with you, but I only have a brief period of time. I want to ask you this question, sir. Do you think that somebody else was using the vocal cords of George Van Tassel? Or was it coming from his mind?
It surely came through his mind. It might have came out of his mind from outer space. Now, that I don't know the function of it, I think. See, that is, to me, so far, incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine it so, and I could imagine it not so.
But
I must admit, I don't know, but it was wonderful.
Fine. One quick question, sir.
Yes.
You've heard the Howard Menger story, haven't you?
Yes.
You don't want to go through it?
Yes.
Do you believe it?
Well, that's what I'm here for. You know, I'm a
not necessarily. I don't believe a word of it.
I know what I've seen, and I will...
That was not my question. Let me start over.
So far, yes. I'll answer yes.
You do believe the story.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate the opportunity of talking with you. Come in here, sir. What is your name?
Dave Spitzer.
Dave, what are you doing at the convention today?
Well, I just came out of curiosity. I've listened to your show for a long time.
Thank you.
And
you know we got to listen.
Well, keeps me asleep in school when school's going on. But
I thought you were sleeping when the program was on.
No,
okay.
I should be, but my history teacher is always waking me up, and so I have you to thank for it. But it's very interesting. I find it more interesting history.
Good.
And came up to take some pictures, and just... I'm halfway in between believing and not believing. I'm not sure.
Well, let me ask you this. How did you arrive at that point, the halfway point of believing? In other words, you missed the Sabbath as a non-believer.
Right.
Not
believing.
Not in terms. You never went to the first day of a window.
I tuned in on, and I heard Dan Fry. And to me, this guy is the most convincing. And I think a man of his position and of his knowledge I don't know any reason why he should lie. And it's the most convincing story. So I got interested in Ben, and then I heard Menger and the other men on the saucers.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, well, I half believe it and I half don't. And I came out here to see just what was going on.
Where did you go to?
Westfield High in Westfield.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Let me talk to this lady a moment. Do you mind coming over, please?
I don't think I have very much to say.
Well, first of all, you could tell me your name.
Well, I'm Mrs. Mignola Salada.
And where is Mrs.
Salada? I live down about 2 miles out of Clinton.
Clinton, New Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on Route 46?
No, I live in a little town halfway between the two highways.
Mm-hmm.
A little place called Hamden.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear you on radio in the morning. You wake me up.
Good. Very well.
I'm very much interested.
Do you like flying saucers?
I saw one once. Mm-hmm. Actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know much about it, but I did see one.
Thank you very
and
much.
And I do believe in them.
Good.
I have a book coming out next month.
Well, when it's ready to come out, you contact me. Maybe we'll talk to you about it, all right?
No, I want to send you one. That's
thank
all.
You very much.
I want to be like that.
Thank you a lot. And let's get back again. What is your name, ma'am? What is your name, ma'am?
Lila Bells.
Lila, when did you first become interested in flying saucers?
About 2 years ago.
And what crew?
I read George Adamski's book, and I read Major Kehoe's book.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't believe Howard Menger.
Mm-hmm. Is there any similarity between Kehoe's book and Adamski's book?
No, not at all. Well, just in the fact that they both believe in the sources, but Major Kehoe was more of a factual
Do you believe his story? Yes, I believe his story, but I don't believe Howard Mendy's story. I'm interested in knowing
well, you can believe the Lebowski story, and there's a certain amount of reluctance to believe the Howard Menger story. May I also go on record as saying I don't believe either one?
Well, I've never met George Adamski, and of course, maybe if I met him or heard his lectures, I might not believe him either. But I did go to hear Menger's lectures, and every time he was asked a question, he always evaded the issue, and anyone that even saw forthwriting their answers, why I don't trust.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that after you read the Adamski book, that there was sufficient evidence presented to you through the book?
There was no evidence, really, that was presented. No evidence, actually. Just his word.
Well, how about... Well, that's true. Just his word. But do you think that he went into greater detail than Howard has? At his lectures, I might add, I've never heard a Howard Menger lecture, although he's been on the party line many times and has told us a lot of stories.
Well, I think that George Adamski's stories went to all sides in the Bible, as far as I'm concerned.
Is this why you like to believe in flying saucers, because of that?
Well, I believe that all the accounts in the Bible, my own belief is that they were originally saucers. In other words, in the Old Testament, Ezekiel and...
the wheel?
Yeah, and Moses. I believe that they all were flying saucers.
Did you ever read any of Jessup's books? I forget the title of one, UFOs in the Bible, I think.
Yes, I read
title.
That book, yes.
Do you agree with Jessup's
Yes, I do, but I had formed my own opinion before I read his book.
I sincerely hope that this is not too personal a question, but... Do you consider yourself to be a very religious person?
Yes, I do.
Is that why you're interested in that?
No, I don't believe in why.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been searching for years for an answer. I never believed any of the stories of the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
I never made sense to me before. I was...
But
I
don't... Sources make a little sense.
They make sense to me because I don't see how any God could create all these planets throughout the universe and only put people on ours. To me, that doesn't make sense.
In other words, you feel that we're narrow-minded in believing
yes,
that we are the only people who are living on a planet. You
yes,
feel that?
I do.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that there are Venusians and Martians and Santonians on this planet walking around like you and I are today?
I haven't really thought that far. I would say that I don't believe it or I don't disbelieve it. I wouldn't say venture to say that they're definitely, I definitely believe that. I don't believe that. I mean, if someone, I'd have to have proof if someone said they were from there.
Everybody seems to have that same desire. What is proof to you? Supposing I said that, well, this happens to be Ellery Lanier. By now, I guess you know that. He's been with me on the party line many times. Supposing you didn't know that this was Ellery Lanier, and I'm not trying to be facetious at this time. I'm very serious. Supposing somebody pointed this man out and said, don't let anybody else know it, but this man is here from another planet visiting today. Would you accept this? Would you believe it?
Not just by you saying that, no.
All right, fine. You've answered that part of the question. The second part of the question, what proof would you want from me or from this alleged Venusian?
Well, I would expect him to be able to be a little bit adept at mental telepathy.
Uh-huh. Well, why are you?
No, I'm not.
Well, why is it that people on this planet, then, don't have that ability, and yet you expect people on other planets to have it?
Because people on other planets are so far advanced, they would have to be advanced.
How do you know this?
So how would they get here if they weren't advanced? They would have to be advanced.
If we were coming right back, we went into a circle now. How do you know that there is anybody here from another planet?
Well, if you could tell me what I was thinking, and if you could tell me a few other things about my own life and things that no one else would know, I might believe it. I might have a receptive mind.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. May I talk with you, sir? Would you mind coming over here, please? You don't look like a Venusian to me. What is your name, sir?
My name is Al Ross.
Where do you come from, Mr. Ross?
Outside New Jersey.
Is this the first time you've been at one of these conventions?
Yes, it is.
What do you think of it?
Well,
honest, that's the line.
Happening, we'll put it that way.
You called a moment to select a word.
I wanted to be very careful with my words.
Uh-huh.
Do
you believe any of the stories?
Well, prior to this meeting, I had occasion to listen to one of your programs.
Mm-hmm.
And some gentleman was discussing flying saucers.
Do you happen to remember the...
No, I don't. It's some time back. However, the name Kehoe was brought in at the time.
Major Kehoe, right.
And I decided I would get the book.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Flying Saucer Conspiracy, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's the title, yeah.
And I went to the public library, I read the book, and I certainly didn't believe any, I wouldn't have believed any such thing prior to that time. But after reading Kehoe's book, I felt that there evidently was something to it.
Why do you have that attitude now after reading Kehoe?
Well, first of all, let me ask you this question first. Have you read a Dancy book?
No, I haven't.
Have
you read any other book on flying saucers?
No, I have not.
Well, then it would be difficult to get an honest opinion from me because you can't compare. In other words, I was interested in knowing if you... Do you know the Adamski story?
No, I do not.
Do you know the Howard Menzies story?
Only from what I heard in the, what I saw in the Jack Parr show.
No, that was very little.
Very true. Out of curiosity, I came here today. I haven't made it a practice to read other periodicals or books or literature or conventions matter. But as I outlined earlier, it is very fascinating, and I'd like to know a little more about it.
Do you think that there's a possibility that there are people arriving here from other planets?
When I say here, I'm not referring to this particular location where we are today. I mean, on this planet.
I don't disbelieve it, let me put it that way.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate the opportunity of interviewing you.
Well, that's more of them, and we've got a lot more for you, too.
You wanted to say something?
Oh, yes. You know, John, we got quite a bit of fan mail because you announced that we were going out to the convention, and among the letters, there were several that came in with news clippings, and one had a news clipping of the Newark Sunday News, dated September 15th, 1968, and there's a big article about the Flying Saucer Convention, and it's titled Flying Saucers Fail to Show, and the writer is a staff correspondent, Richard Hapster. And there's a subtitle that says, but 500 pay $2 to hear of space. And then there's a little description of all the things that were sold as part of the show, as part of the Flying Saucer Convention. And I'm quoting now. It says here, also on sale were the complete collection of Mendes photographs of flying saucers at $5 a foot. Most flying from $8. In addition, they sold Mrs. Mendes' book, My Saturnian Lover, under her pseudonym, which is Ramala Baxter. And there were a number of other things on sale, such as the record album that Howard had made. There's a little notice here that his former wife doesn't believe in space people, and she also said that Howard, who had wanted to be a songwriter, had known this city a long time ago. He used to play it on the piano. She said that the song now sold as music from outer space, and it was his favorite city, which he sounded out on the piano before the people from the other planet landed.
I'll have to listen to a moment. Is this something, or are you reading something?
No, I'm reading this from the New York Sunday News, September 14th, 1958. As a matter of fact, I didn't know all this. I have met Howard. Yes, I have met Howard in this talk, but I didn't know this. This is news to me.
Mm-hmm. I thought he couldn't play this news.
No, who recorded this? Charles Leading, the man came here with the album, and if I'm not mistaken, one night Charles was on the party line, and we interviewed and Howard, and they Howard, I think, explained that he received I may be wrong about this.
A telepathic?
Yeah, a telepathic communication from, he didn't know from where. He received this message, and it told him to get into his car and drive down X Highway. And he continued down that highway, and then he received another message to make a left or a right turn at the next road. And he did that, and it seems to me that he went down a dirt road, or certainly not a major highway, went down a little side road. And over to the left someplace, there was a little shack, at least it appeared to be a wooden shack from the outside, and he pulled off that country road onto the road that led to this shack, and he knocked on the door. I might add, all this time we are told that he was receiving telepathic communications, guiding him, in other words, suggesting what he should do, and he rapped on the door, and it seems to me there was a piano there, and somebody was there that taught him that. Charles, just happened to stop in for a moment. Charles, would you just a moment, please?
John, I just want to say that if any of the listeners just tuned in, this is not my opinion. I read this in the newspaper.
I realize that, yes.
Did you know? Well, I'm not corrupted. What about the plans of it?
Wasn't there a sort of a broken-down shack or something in New York State?
Howard heard the music coming from the shack. It wasn't a piano, though, John. It was a Saturnian instrument, which rather conveniently was very much like the piano. The development has been parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard heard the music, and I think the ability may have been telepathically imparted to him that he was able to recall it
note for note. It was also fortunate, you might want to note, that the Venusian scale had the 440-cycle A, the same as ours, which helped things a lot. So Howard picked this up after one hearing.
But he didn't say, I don't know, I was thinking
of
the
other
thing, he
couldn't
play the piano before. This was,
Well, I will say, after hearing the record, that I tend to believe Howard. So I wouldn't want to dispute anything he said, you understand?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know nothing about
it. You think it's authentic music? Mm-hmm.
No, I think you can't play piano.
Oh.
I think in all fairness, Charles, I think that if I read this paragraph, that there's a possibility that this will enlighten a couple of listeners. Some years later, Howard Menger met a man from Saturn who played for him on a Saturnian instrument very much like our piano, just as you said. He instructed Howard Menger that he was to bring this music to the attention of the people here on Earth by playing it for them on a piano. Howard Menger never played a piano before and had no knowledge of music whatsoever. Yet he was assured that when he sat down at the piano, his hands would be guided and he would be able to play. From that time on, Howard Menger has been able to play the piano. He plays best after midnight. On several occasions, he played for hours without rest, while his spellbound friends listened in appreciative silence and awe. This music, as played by Howard Menger, is never duplicated in his interpretation. When he is playing, it has a wonderful effect on many people hearing this music. Now, I'm reading from the album entitled Authentic Music from Another Planet. This is one of the liner notes on the jacket. So you're right. I forgot about the how this all occurred. You're correct.
I should point out that this is probably one of the greatest cases of frustrated songwriters in the world. Here, this poor Saturnian kicked around on Saturn for years. He couldn't get the music published or played. He had to come all the way down to Earth to get somebody to listen to the thing and get it distributed, which is... you've got to admire the man's punk.
And we're talking this morning with Ben Iskowitz, Ellery Lanier, and Lillian Lanier. Charles Whedon just stopped in for a moment. Let me remind you again, just in case you've joined us during the past few minutes, we're talking with Ben Iskowitz, the cybernetician, Ellery Lanier, top brother to a fantastic science fiction, and Lillian Lanier, and we're talking about a day that we spent at the Menger Farm. We were very fortunate to be able to participate in the first annual East Coast Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention this past Saturday. And I understand on Sunday they had a large crowd there, too. There's a little discrepancy. According to some of the newspapers that I've seen, I don't know, was there a report in the clipping that you received in your mail? I didn't see any of the Jersey papers as far as the amount of people. Did you notice?
They say 500.
I happen to know Dick Hoxter, who wrote the article. Isn't that who wrote it, you said?
Yes, Richard Hoxter.
I know him, and I think that he's a very, very capable reporter, and a very accurate reporter. I hope that if Dick is listening, that he will accept my apologies. I feel that there were many more people. Somebody told me, pardon me, Lily.
I was going to say there certainly were a lot of cars there. I didn't count
them. I was going to comment on the cars. I suggested to somebody, I don't know if it was George Van Heck or somebody else, to count the cars. That is, to stand on the hilltop there, because the cars were in the valley, to count the cars. Somebody came back with a count of something like 600 cars. Now, I did not count these. I don't know, but it was a little over 600, according to the count that was given to me. If this is true, I don't think I'm wrong when I say that we could possibly figure that maybe there's at least two to a car. Some people, I think, because I noticed some of the family, three and four. But let's say even two to a car. If this is true, 600 cars, this adds up to about 1,200. At least, no. I mean, providing they have two to a car. Certainly, very few people came sing-alone.
You know, John, there were quite a number of people who helped us, Howard, from the neighborhood. They sort of did a little directioning and so on. Not a lot of neighbors did, and they wore signs saying Moonman, Spaceman. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
Well, I did, and I spoke to several of them, and he said that Howard had invited them to sort of do a little helping.
Oh, wonderful. Very nice. Very nice.
Cooperative neighbors.
Certainly.
Very nice.
I must say that my, aside from the day that was full of thrills, my greatest thrill of the day was when some newspaper reporter asked Evan Burwell, who was turning up to me, if this was Mrs. Iskwith, and I hope Liz is not listening. what do you say, Bob? Are you ready? All right, fine. I'll take care of one piece of business here, and then we'll be back to... with our guest of the morning.
Taste that we made at the first annual East Coast Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention.
Can I talk with you, ma'am?
What is your name?
Connie Grady.
Connie Grady. Mm-hmm. Did you meet Ellery Lanier?
No, I didn't, but I've heard him many times.
Well, Ellery mentioned to me before. He said, I'd like to have the opportunity of talking to that lady. So I'm going to let Ellery talk with you a few
minutes. Wow.
Wait, we'd like to hear. Would you repeat your name?
Connie Grady.
Connie Grady. You have listened to the Long John Show.
Yes.
And I imagine you are interested in the flying saucers question.
Yes, I am.
Have you had any personal experience?
No, I wish I had, but I haven't, no.
Have you listened to discussions of these flying saucers specifically?
Yes, I have.
And what did you think of them?
Well, my opinion varies. At first, I was a little more enthusiastic than I am now. When I first heard about Major Kehoe and his report. And I'd like to believe them. But I don't really. I mean, I wish it were true, but I feel that I don't think it is now.
How does the thought of people coming down from the sky or persons or beings out of the sky and strange machines, how does that affect you? Does it frighten you? Can you think of what happened when Columbus first came to the New World and saw people on the stars? Do you think he was frightened or whether he took this as a matter of course? Do you think this is something in the same order? Would you be glad if
no, I don't think it's
people
in
the same on the planet?
I don't think it's the same.
You don't. So how do you think it differs?
Well, my feeling would be that anybody that could come from another planet here is so much more intelligent than we are. And I'm not afraid of intelligence. I think that's the answer to everything, is the more intelligent we are, the further we'll go along.
Do you think just the fact that these people could make a flying saucer would necessarily make them more intelligent than we are?
Yeah, they're a little smarter.
With machines?
Yes.
And why do you say, I gather you think that they would be friendly, you're not afraid of them. Do you think that people who can make very good machines are friendly people? Does that follow in your mind?
No, but if they came down here and they were just investigated, or if these stories were true, they're obviously friendly people.
Well, do you think they're just sort of looking us over and sizing us up? Perhaps they want to...
I don't think so. If they are observing us, it is just a matter of interest. The same as you would have observed an
answer. Well, do you think we might think
of little ants seeing the people in small
I think
places.
It's possible. I don't... That isn't my theory. I think one of the theories is possible.
You mean they might even look down at us and just not really take any particular notice of us? We don't really know very much on the planet, but we have little ants crawling around.
I think it's possible.
Well, how would you feel about it if you were considered just a little ant crawling around?
Well,
do you think
the ants worry about what we think of them?
No,
I don't
know. Have you ever turned over a stone with some ants crawling under it and watched what the ants do?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Well, did they think you were very friendly? What did they do?
I don't think they had any friendly. I mean, we're so far above an ant. But I don't think they're thinking of those things at all. I mean,
no.
I could have been an earthquake to them.
Yes. I have observed that ants scurry away. They run away and kick the stone over.
Yes.
Hardly
out of fear for deception.
Yes. Well, what opens up there is the possibility that these flying saucers are not dangerous. I think we should take measures to protect them from them.
I'll tell you frankly, I haven't given any thought at all about them not being friendly.
Well, this is very interesting. And the thing is
Connie Brady.
So thank you, Connie Brady.
Peggy
the George.
Peggy
the George. Peggy? Peggy the George. Peggy? Peggy the George. Well, Peggy, I noticed that you were smiling at one of the answers to the question of about whether human beings were the equivalent of ants that could be stepped on. And what is your feeling about flying saucers?
I think there's something
coming to the roof. I do believe so. Have you had any personal experience?
No, but
within
me, I feel that there is something more superior than we are, coming here. Of course, I think it's the theory of the world is on the end. I don't know. It's just my knowledge. I think God is sending down the...
Oh, I
don't sleep night and day.
Well, I'm glad you're looking. Thank you very much, Sergeant. We appreciate it a lot.
Let me correct you this, gentlemen. I think we have a couple of people here from Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken. Would you two gentlemen be kind enough to come over here, please? Want to step right over here, please?
What is your name, sir?
Joe Judicovich.
Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
Connie Horgan from Pittsburgh.
You need that last name again. What was it?
Judicovich.
And what's the first name?
Joe.
I'll handle it, Joe, all right?
Okay.
Fair
you
enough.
We were talking over there a moment ago. You said that you've heard some of the party line bits and that you were a little interested in this, and you came out to go, and you were rather disappointed.
And when that means listeners,
why you were disappointed, why you don't believe in saucers as much as you did prior to coming out here.
Well, I'm interested with you. I think it's a very badly planned situation here. They announced it as a show, and I have to agree with them that it is a show. I thought that we would get a little more conclusive lecturing here, but they seem to be off on tangents and so forth, and it doesn't add up to be somebody's true belief as far as I'm concerned.
Did you ever hear any of these people speak prior to today?
Other than your program, no.
Do you think that when you heard them on WOR, that it was more interest? I'm not looking for a compliment because it had nothing to do with me.
No,
I'm interested in your honest opinion.
I'm unbiased in that direction, but I think it was more interesting on the program for this reason. There was a stopper in yourself in all this talk that they were putting forth. I mean, there was contradiction. Here, there's nobody contradicting. They're just running away.
Well, of course, I am not here defending them because, as I've mentioned on the air time and time again, I have nothing to do with it. This gives me an opportunity to meet people just like
the
gentleman here. I don't buy any of it. I've said this on the program dozens and dozens of times. But in all fairness, I think I would have to represent them and say that when a man is giving a speech, you can't expect, in other words, you heard Eisenhower speak. And there's nothing you can do by saying, now, wait a moment, you know, let's cut this out. I don't believe it. You know what I mean? You don't have that opportunity. Now, I understand they're going to give you a chance to ask questions. I have been told. I may be 100% wrong.
Pardon me. Sorry. Well, the thing I mean by that is this. When they're on your program, they speak with quite a bit more reservation than they do right here. They're rather careful. They're picking your words, much like I am right now. They pick their words quite a bit when they're on the program with you, because they know the attendee's going to contradict them.
I must be very charitable and tell you this, that I do have a couple of ground rules. First of all, I believe that we have a few listeners, and I don't want to offend any segment of the listeners, because many of these fellows who come on the program, they immediately want to tie religion into the discussion. It's a metaphysical approach, a religious approach to things, and I feel that we may offend some of our listeners. So I tell them that I do not want that part of their story. I mean, there are some stories that you'll never hear on the part of them that are so wild that I wouldn't repeat them now, because we're on a live mic, too.
Yeah.
We had the experience, well, I don't know how many shows you may have listened to, but there are times, I might say, very seldom, I'm happy about that, that we don't even finish with a guest. In other words, something has happened. I'm looking in on the inside.
Something has happened,
and all of a sudden you'll find that I announce that we're very grateful that Mr. Jones came from nowhere, Nebraska, and we hope that he'll join us again.
Yes.
And at that point, Mr. Jones, we're helping him pack up. And if Mr. Jones decides that he's going to stay till 5:30, not that I'm a big wow, but it's up to me to put on a commercial, an electrical transcription, a no-dose commercial, which gives me 58 seconds to tell Mr. Jones that he's leaving. And at 24 floors down, the elevator would be slower but more convenient. So that's why this happens sometimes. Let me talk to the gentleman. Sir, again, your name.
My name is Connie Horgan.
You're from Pittsburgh, too.
From Pittsburgh. I'm a neighbor of yours. Mm-hmm. And I won't talk anything about this flying saucer stuff, but I'll just say that you cost me a lot of money.
My wife is brought over from no good to an Iowa deep massage. The only thing that'll make this thing real to me is when you saw advertising flying saucers, I wouldn't buy one.
Thank you very much.
That's all, John.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. Nice meeting you. Thank you, sir. Very good.
Well, that's more of the interviews, and we've got more. Boy, in a little while, this is WOR Radio, your station in New York. Long John with the party line.
We have a lot of telegrams rolling in here, believe me.
Now, here's a telegram up a little west.
And have you got the Newark Evening News there? Is that what was sent to you?
The Newark Sunday News.
Sunday News. Well, that's what we have. Do you have anything there about a fake message? Is there something in there? Because I have a telegram here before it's read. I'm sorry that these have to be read. Is there something in there? Don't read it.
I can't quite find it right now.
Have you got September 15th?
No, I have September 14th.
Well, here, we have one here. Do you want to read this, please? Now, I would like to say this, that I know nothing about this. This is from Elsa M. Tiedebach, Plainfield, New Jersey, and here's her message.
Long John. In the U.S. Evening News, September 15th, quote, his divorced wife, who at one time backed his story, has charged he is a fake. She says his saucer photographs are phony and that he once faked a message from outer space with a shortwave radio and a tape recorder. We'll forward articles to you from Elsa M. Tiedebach of Plainfield, New Jersey.
Well, my only comment on that, Chris, actually, it isn't necessary for me to comment, but I will anyway.
I know Rose Menger, and I also know Marla. And both of these ladies I consider to be very pleasant people. And I know nothing about what the statements that are being made by the ex-Mrs. Menger. And I have never had the opportunity of seeing her since they have parted. And this has happened to many families, so I don't think that anybody is in a position to condemn a man or a woman because they have reached a point in their lives when they are no longer compatible. I don't think this has happened before. It's very unfortunate that family ties must be broken, but it could happen to anybody. So I think some people, and I'm not referring to Elsa Tiedebach, who, because she is not being critical, she is merely reporting, quoting an article that appeared in the Newark Evening News. And that's all I can say about this particular message. Now, getting back to the tape. I had a gentleman in a blue shirt.
I had a gentleman here in a blue shirt. Oh, he's way over there. I'll talk. Would you mind coming over, sir? This gentleman here in the blue shirt.
Would you mind coming in here, sir? Like to talk with you a moment, sir. How are you?
What is your name? On the phone. I talked to you on the phone one night.
What is your name again, sir?
Perry is my name.
Oh, yes. Mr. Perry, are you enjoying yourself at the first annual East Coast Interplanetary Convention?
Very much, sir.
Why?
Well, it's a beautiful day and a nice
day. But I agree with you. Great seeing you, Joe. More than that, sir.
Mr. Munger has a very pretty view from his place.
That I'll buy.
He's got a bigger house than he had before. He must be looking up in the world.
Keen observation, to say the least. I understand, just so that we can set the record straight, this is the first time I've been out. I've been invited to come out here dozens of times. In fact, I was offered a ride in a saucer, but I'm too busy. And, you know, I don't like flying anyway.
Are you going back pretty soon?
Pretty soon where?
To
another planet?
No,
New York? No, I won't be going back for a little while, but I think you're talking about the house. Mr. Menger recently married the very charming young lady, Marla Baxter, and this happens to be Marla Baxter's son. So Menger was not that lucky with the brush and the pot of paint making time.
He married in with them.
Well, lucky, huh? You against that?
No,
you're wanted, huh?
Sure, you're lucky boy.
Good. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
I'll see you again sometime.
Good.
Before you leave.
All right. Thank you, sir. Let me talk to this gentleman over here.
Yes.
Would you come over, sir, please? What is your name, sir?
Harry Spector.
Harry Spector. Ellery, you want to come around here? Mm-hmm. This is Ellery Lanier. Harry Spector.
Possibly Mr. Spector has a couple of opinions, Ellery.
Mr. Spector, have you listened to the party line?
Oh, yes.
And you've heard these various stories about flying saucers and people from out of space and other planets.
That's right.
What is your reaction to them?
As far as them landing, I'm not sure. I don't believe that there's life exists on other planets.
What do you base that opinion on?
Nothing further, though.
Well, what kind of evidence do you accept for life on other planets?
I'm not vain enough to think that we're the only ones that are populated. This is the only world that's populated.
Well, this is just a matter of reasoning on your part. You don't have any factual evidence that you base your opinions on.
No, none at all.
Have you ever looked at the other planets through telescopes?
Once.
And what did you see?
It looked like stars, that's all.
Well, which planet did you look at? Do you remember?
Oh, no, I couldn't identify them.
Well, did it look like anything that you would imagine this planet would look like if you were a faraway earth?
Looks like, if I looked at a map. Well, I'm a top explainer. It's like the moon, let's put it that way.
Did you ever look at the moon through a telescope?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard Mr. Menger's descriptions of what the
people on the moon were like and what the buildings on the moon were like.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Could you imagine seeing buildings as such as those described by Mr. Menzel on the moon after
the first distance, I think it'd be pretty tough to recognize any buildings.
Well, do you think buildings could exist in the type of thing that you saw when you looked at the moon?
Still a hard question, isn't it?
Well, why did you come out to this meeting, this space,
Truthfully, a conference today, and not only gentlemen.
Well, you obviously then don't believe in flying saucers.
No, no, that's not true.
Well, you do believe in them.
I do believe in, other planets having people living on them. I do believe that they have sense the way we do, but, as far as, superiority, I don't know yet. I have no proof of that.
Do you think it is possible that they are from New York with a possible idea of coming and landing here and taking over?
I don't know what their reason would be, but if they're more intelligent than we are, then they've gone beyond us, and they're not looking for more input.
Well, a good idea if our government or all the governments of the world did something to prepare for any possible attack on the planet Earth by people from other planets.
I don't believe we have anything that would be powerful enough to stop them if they were superior to us.
Oh, do you think that seriously?
That's true.
I feel much safer after hearing you say that. However, I think many people don't have the feeling that flying saucers could possibly be dangerous or have evil intentions toward the Earth. I get a sense of their being friendly and affectionate toward
the Earth. I'm more inclined to believe that myself.
You are.
That's right.
So what was your name?
Harry Spector.
Well, Harry Spector, and I hope you see your flying saucer tonight. I see the sun is setting in the west, but it's not quite setting yet.
Put in the tail of the new world. It'll come up when it comes.
Well, keep your eyes open.
Right.
Thank you. What is your name, ma'am?
Nancy Gingola.
Nancy Gingola. Have you come to see flying saucer today?
No, I didn't.
Are you interested in flying saucer?
Not especially.
Not especially. Well, how did you happen to be here today?
I came with a friend out of curiosity.
Well,
What have you found out? What have your studies of curiosity discovered? Well, maybe I missed the name. I think it's a specific thing, but I haven't really gotten too much education about flying saucers from what I've heard. Well, what's that called about flying saucer, New Jersey? Not an answer lot, because it isn't actually a subject that is really discussed in detail, and we'd like to see the flying saucer and then especially something up in the sky. And for the normal, people like us, that's all you hear. Well, where do you come from? Cape Town, New Jersey. Apparently there have been many sightings of flying saucers over New Jersey. Have you heard or met any people who claim to have seen saucers in New Jersey?
No, I haven't. How would you feel about it if you don't know that there were people coming from other worlds in flying saucers? Would this mean anything to you?
If I saw
proof. Yes, what would it mean to you if someone showed you this proof? What would you think or feel about this?
It would mean that everything I believed ever since I've been a child is wrong.
And then what?
And then I just would have to continue from there with a new outlook on life.
A new outlook on life?
Yes.
Have you started to think about this or this question at all since you came to this meeting today?
No.
What is your name?
Nancy Bagnola.
Nancy Bagnola from New Jersey.
Copeland, New Jersey.
Copeland, New Jersey. Thank you. Very nice meeting you.
Well, some people may think we're off. Of course, that was a question to Dave Feel and J. Robert Mantley when we were out at the first annual East Coast Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. I wanted Dave Field and Bob Mantley to cue me if we were off as far as taste was concerned. Of course, I suppose some people listening, maybe Ben listening, says, they're all off. I thought it was interesting, though, to have the chance of talking with all these people. Honestly, the people out there were really wonderful. I mean, wonderful people to have the chance to talk to. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, 710 on the dial. And as a reporter, and I might add that that's what I consider myself as far as the convention was concerned. I was just acting as a reporter out there. I would like to make this comment. I think it will be of interest to some of our listeners. When I had the opportunity of attending the 4th annual interplanetary spacecraft convention out in Yucca Valley, California, I interviewed a number of people out there. I think most the regular listeners will remember those tapes. It's interesting to note